their customers stay healthy. This week, frozen food giant Stouffer's began including suicide prevention tips on the boxes of their single-serving prepared meals. The company hopes that the tips will teach customers alternatives to unhealthy choices, such as killing themselves because they eat every meal alone. The idea was conceived by Linda Horowitz of Nestle Prepared Foods, the parent company of Stouffer's.
We are aware that the purchase of a Stouffer's mac and cheese for one can be a cry for help. After 2 minutes of watching a meal slowly rotate in a microwave, people reach what we call a risk threshold point, where they frequently make the decision to end their lives.
Customers at this store in Boston said they appreciated the tips.
The tips made me realize that even though I'm eating gravy meatloaf right now, there's still a possibility that things won't always be like this.
The tips are written in a small font, so you have to turn on the lights to see them. But it's better than eating in the dark again.
They give me the confidence to take my dinners out on the lawn again so I can watch the cars drive by while I eat.
Stouffer's has also released a special set of tips specifically for its Lean Cuisine customers.
We wrote these tips in order to help the working woman think more about treating herself right and less about how quickly her eggs are aging in her ovaries.
In addition to hosting support forums on their website, Stouffer's has added a section where users can post videos of themselves eating Stouffer's meals for others to watch as they eat, simulating companionship. To support the new campaign, Stouffer's has also hired licensed counselors to give free sessions in the frozen food aisles of participating supermarkets, and a friendly Stouffer's van waiting in the parking lot if a customer clearly needs to be institutionalized. Based on the success of Stouffer's new packaging, Kashi has begun printing tips on the back of their cereal boxes about how to not be such a smug, annoying, pretentious asshole.
Alright, we're back. And June was a bitch. But summer started. Thanks for all of your positive thoughts and messages for Katrina. She's doing very well. I haven't been able to be very open about anything regarding her situation on the show. And I'm not going to say too much until it's all done. But she's doing great. And I appreciate you guys showing such love and support on Facebook. That stupid hot dog eating contest, that's going to happen again on Monday. Don't forget to tune in to ESPN for all places. ESPN is going to show this thing again. ESPN, give me a break. They still call this thing a sport. I recapped it in 2008, where Joey Chestnut protected his title after dethroning the previous champ, Kobayashi, in 2007. And I swore then that I wasn't going to talk about this anymore. But I guess last year, because, you know, it's everywhere. If you go to sports, that's really the only connection of food and sports, is this eating competition. But I guess last year, it got surreal. It's become more embarrassing than wrestling. For those of you who are new to My Life as a Foodie, and didn't get a chance to listen to this, is back in episode 21, I think. Here's a sampling of my coverage, my recap, of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest 3 years ago at this time.
They come from the four corners of the globe. Gustatory athletes competing in a near 100-year-old tradition to win the coveted yellow mustard belt. Nathan's famous hot dogs. Famous hot dog taste. Famous hot dog quality. Famous since 1916. It's the hot dog of champions. Nathan's famous. There can be only one.
The two greatest eating champions of all time, Paul. Joey Chestnut won last year with 66 hot dogs and buns. He did it against a Kobayashi with an injured jaw. I called Chestnut an American hero.
An American hero. Dude, come on. My friend Tracy just got back from his tour in Iraq with his unit, who all came back safely, I should mention. That's an American hero. I wouldn't even make this joke. Considering what the country's going through right now, I maybe would have made a retraction. or thought about that a little bit? American hero?
But he must win this year to avoid the asterisk. Now, Kobayashi, in this ADD-riddled society, six straight victories. He lost last year. He's all but fallen off the map. He is nothing if not a brand. To maintain that brand, he must win today.
Yeah, and the expression of the sport, they say, hasn't eaten since last October. We're going to take you back the final minutes of last year when Joey Chestnut was just powering on, going hard, and Kobayashi hit the wall. And in fact, he had an unfortunate moment. It required a judge's consultation.
Unfortunate moment, yeah. That guy looked like he was going to hurl. He looked like a squirrel. He had all this crap hanging out of his mouth, these big giant cheeks, and one eye open. He's like, oh, dear God.
And when it was over, the belt had come back to the United States.
Absolute great moment in American sports.
Great moment in American sports, dude. Now, let me think here for a second. Great moments in American sports. Boston finally wins a World Series. New York Giants upset New England in the Super Bowl. Ruins a perfect season for the Patriots. Fresno State, earlier this year, unseeded, coming into the College Baseball World Series, wins the whole thing. Wilt Chamberlain scores 100 points against the Knicks. Lance Armstrong wins 7 Tour de France in a row. Michael Jordan hits clutch threes with no time on the clock. And Joey Chestnut eating 62 hot dogs in 12 minutes. All great moments in American sports.
66 was impressive. Now, if Kobayashi's jaw was indeed injured, he did 63. They're talking 70 today.
Let's go to Jimmy Dykes. He has Joey Chestnut.
I'm here with the current world record holder, Joey Chestnut, the number one ranked eater in the world. But for the first time here in about 30 minutes, Joey, you're going to step up to the plate over here with a lot of pressure on you to defend your title. How does that pressure affect you right now?
I'm not looking at it as pressure. It's all support. There's 30,000 New Yorkers out here supporting me and pushing me to my limit. And I'm just going to celebrate 4th of July with all of them and hopefully come out with a victory.
What's your limit today?
It's hard to say, but if my body's cooperating, we're looking at a new record.
All right, congratulations. Good luck.
Thank you.
Well, for more on the Tiger Woods of eating, let's go back to Paul Page.
The Tiger Woods of eating. Holy crap, dude.
In the heart of Northern California, we visit a gentleman, Joey Chestnut, at ease with himself and enjoying some fishing. Here are his thoughts on the victorious outing he had while eating 66 hot dogs and buns last year.
What type of competitor or athlete are you?
Athlete.
See? The guy asks him what kind of athlete he is, and he can't stop laughing. The dude eats hot dogs. He's not an athlete. You ought to see my cat eat tuna. You want to talk about an athlete? He'll eat you out of house and home. Now, there's some competitive eating.
And we want to show you a comparison, too, between Muhammad Ali and Kobayashi.
Oh, no, they didn't.
At the podium, and here we go. We're ready for the countdown. The eating begins.
You know, out of the gate here, Paul, I wouldn't be surprised to see a 10 or 11 hot dog minute out of Joey and Kobayashi. They attack those dogs like Lindsay Lohan attacks a minibar. It's completely reckless in the first few minutes.
Both are bouncing down the food as best they can. Kobayashi and Chestnut. One dog difference with 30 seconds to go.
This is amazing. This is probably one of the most exciting finishes in all of sports.
And we count the final 15 seconds now.
Let's go OT.
And that's it.
That is a photo finish right there, Paul.
How do you have a photo finish with the dogs?
We've gone overtime before. It'll be the judge's call down there. What's in the mouth, of course, counts at the very end. As long as you swallow it.
Ridiculous. But last year, it really entered the realm of wrestling. After refusing to sign a contract with Major League Eating, which is their federation, I guess, because he had some kind of a dispute over being able to compete in events that they weren't sanctioning those events. It's kind of like wrestling. Kobayashi, who had been the long-standing champ for years, didn't take part in the eating contest last year, the hot dog eating contest. Instead, he, you know, decides to watch it from the crowd. He attends it and watches it from the crowd. So when the contest is over, he tries to get on the stage, and then he gets in a scuffle with the cops, and because they're trying to prevent him from getting on the stage. and then they led him away in handcuffs. They dropped the charges, but everyone said that it disgraced the sport. The sport. What the hell, man? Listen, watching porn is more of a sport than eating competitions. I mean, at least you get some kind of exercise from it, sort of. Anyway, today I'm drinking wine, again, from the Planet Bordeaux Superior Collection that I was sent. This one is a 2009 Axel de Vignier Bordeaux Blanc. And as with most of these wines, it's distributed out of New York and New Jersey, and they're working their way through the United States. It's priced around $9, so it's very affordable. It's 12% ABV, and it's a white wine. It's a classic Bordeaux blend of Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon grapes. Very light, very refreshing for a hot summer day. It's great to drink these wines when it's hot. Get them cold. They're nice and crisp. And you can, you know, really, for $9, it's a bargain. The aroma is floral, very fruity. The taste is very clean and dry, kind of citrus-like, which I love in these white wines. You'll find that with Sauvignon Blanc, you're either going to get citrus flavors or sometimes grassy flavors. And I like them both. But this one I particularly like because on this one, you know, literally you could drink this on its own if you want. Or you can have it with fish, with chicken, or maybe some grilled pork chops. Very versatile white wine. Again, an excellent price if you're just getting your feet wet with wines, especially Bordeaux blends from France. I know we don't do a lot of wine on the show. So when we do, I want to make sure that I'm bringing up something friendly that you can enjoy without getting reamed at the cash register. All right, so earlier this month, I posted a question to the My Life as a Foodie Facebook group. And listen, if you have not joined the group on Facebook, please do me a favor, do it now. It's embarrassing how few people we have in our group. I know we've got over more than 140 listeners. You know, the numbers don't lie. And maybe you're not on Facebook. I don't know. Some of you, you know, just decide that Facebook's not for you. But I'm looking at other groups on Facebook that are really for stupid causes, stupid crap. They've got 1,000 members. I mean, our group is like a skinny Ethiopian boy compared to the rest of these groups. That's a bit of a letdown. Anyway, I asked for group participation. What is your money meal? Name the one meal that you can make in your sleep, your go-to dish, when you have to make something, and you know it's going to be delicious, and you know you're not going to screw it up. You don't need a recipe. You don't have to look at a recipe to make it. Something you can make in a pinch, with obviously required amount of prep time, of course. What is the money meal? This came up because my friend Don, he made chicken with morels. And I go, dude, that's like your go-to dish. You can make that anytime. He doesn't need a recipe. It's always delicious. And it's, you know, he had made it and I thought, that's a really good idea. What is everybody has this? You know, everyone's got, anybody who cooks has one meal they can go to. The responses were incredible, and I'm going to read them to you. It's funny, too, because a lot of them are comfort dishes, one-pot casseroles, you know, the kind of stuff you'd see, you know, in easy recipes. But that's the stuff that, you know, we can go back to every time. So Andrew Klinger responds first, and he says, look, I hope it's not a cop-out, but I make New York-style pizza, and I make the dough from scratch with spent grains from my homebrew. And I swear I can make it in my sleep. I substitute one cup of flour for one cup of spent grains. I thought, no, that is hardcore. Spent grained pizza. I mean, that's fantastic. So I knew this was going to be good. Jason Lewis makes the bomb meatloaf. Peter Hoey makes carbonara. Robert Guerrero had dulce de leche brownies. Chris Cognac, the hungry detective. Coke pot roast. It's a can of Coke, a packet of onion soup, a can of tomato sauce, diced onion, you braise the roast, then you add the rest of the stuff. Katrina makes this Dorito casserole that her Aunt Dose's Motorhome Club's potluck, that was like their favorite dish, and she's made that and it's great. Michael Miller makes a sausage chili, takes about 5 different varieties, some onion seasonings, can of tomato paste. He says it's 1,000% distilled man food. Timothy Aaron, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right, dude, potato soup, I love potato soup. Mariko Anu makes ahi poke. In fact, she posted this, and then I work with her, and I had some of her ahi poke the next day, and it was great. If she made that in her sleep, not bad. Danny Spears makes green beans with roasted minced garlic and fresh rosemary lemon chicken. That's a good dish. Nick Garville said that there was a couple of recipes that he learned from his parents. Lentil soup, and he puts dried apricots and smoked paprika, and his father's potato chip tuna casserole. Like I said, comfort food. Here's some comfort food. Huntington Sacks, Army-style SOS, that's shit on a shingle. That's cream chip beef over biscuits. Fantastic. Pasta carbonara, there's a second entry for that one. Tandoori chicken, that's good stuff. Jesse makes badass Mexican food with homemade rice, beans, usually some tacos. Grill the chicken or carne asada. He says if there's leftover beans and rice, they have huevos rancheros for breakfast the next day. Jason Sands makes ground turkey with onions, tomatoes, and mushrooms. Serves over pepperdill noodles and some rustic bread and butter. David South makes chicken and dumplings. I've had that. Very good. Really authentic. Some great stuff here. Adrian Googly Rowe, ground sausage burgers with habanero mayo. He makes the burgers and mayo from scratch. The mayo with some garlic if he has it. It's kind of like an aioli. Some toppings on some fresh bread from the local market a block away. Always works if I'm strapped for time. Maria Lang makes pot roast with vegetables, gravy, and of course mashed potatoes. She also makes some homemade cream corn with real whipping cream. In fact, I've had that, and it was over the top. Good stuff. Steve Charbot makes beef stir fry with broccoli or anything else he has in the fridge. I love that. Like refrigerator soup. Rick from Big Foamy Head makes meatloaf. He never uses a recipe for that. He also makes a smoked salmon with a quick, simple brine and some dill. Bubby from Brain Gravy just does steaks on the grill. Very simple. Natasha Barrett makes chicken adobo, braised chicken thighs that have been marinated in soy sauce, vinegar, garlic, and pepper, and you're done. Of course, Don chimes in with his chicken and morels, which started the whole thing. Kristen Fisher makes Spanish tapa-style shrimp, loads of garlic, smoked paprika, chilies, sherry, lemon juice, olive oil. Good bread to dip the pan juices in. Doug Durda makes beer can chicken. Says the right can of craft beer shoved up a chicken's tuchus. Jennifer Ryle makes Mama's Drunken Pasta. She said her boys named it that long ago. She goes, it's the meal I create when you plan on serving 4 chicken breasts for their family and her son brings home 5 additional friends. It's never the same thing twice, but she always has a glass of wine in hand when she's preparing it. Marie Stringer makes cabbage, spatzel, and kielbasa. It only gets better with time. It's cheap. Takes under 30 minutes to prepare it. Her husband can take it to lunch all week. It feeds an army. A good German beer, and you have my go-to meal. So then after she posts that, Jason, he says he'd like the recipe for that, which then leads to a discussion that we should have a place where people can go to the site to provide their own recipes. So we're going to do that. If you'd like to provide your favorite money meal recipe for visitors of the site, go to mylifeasafoodie.com. Okay? In the post for this episode, right at the top, it'll be episode 80, Money Meal. In the comments section for this episode, provide your recipe. I'll review them. I'll format them accordingly. I'll post them on a new page. It'll be a special page on the site called Money Meals or Listener Recipes. All right? And it'll appear as a link at the top of the website in the menu at the top. And you continue to offer them. The page will continue to grow. And I think it would be fun. I appreciate you guys being so great about this, too. It's been a blast for me to just kind of watch this. And everyone was sharing their meals. And like I said, it was interesting to see how many comfort dishes there were in all of this. So what is my money meal? The one meal I can make without using a recipe. You know, what's the one meal that comes out the same way every time? It's humble, delicious, easy. Beef bourguignon. I know it sounds fancy, but it really isn't. In fact, it's one of the laziest dishes to make because all you're doing is simmering this pot of meat, carrots, wine, and broth for a couple of hours, you know, until the meat just falls apart. It's a dish that will pull the wool over everybody's eyes. They'll think you're a gourmet chef when in reality you're just lazy, like me. I mean, I made it for the first time a long time ago when I first started cooking out of Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking, but I didn't make it again until Don and I went to a book signing for Bourdain's Layal cookbook, and his recipe was in there from the restaurant. And it was a lot different than Julia's because it was simpler. And I've since taken my own spin on that and made it even simpler. So one of our friends made it with Imperial Stout once, and it was good, but it wasn't beef bourguignon to me. I mean, it was beer-braised beef, and it was fantastic, but it wasn't the same dish. And here's the deal. I'm going to make this, and I threw some things in that you wouldn't normally do, but this is how I make it, okay? Mind you, there are probably 1,000 different variations that people are going to hit you with. Oh, that's not how I make it. Oh, that's not how they do it in France. Listen, we're not in France. We're not in your kitchen. We're in my kitchen, okay? This is how I make mine. I start with 2 pounds of beef shoulder. stew meat, basically. If you want to buy stew meat, you certainly can. Something cheap, fatty, not lean, no filet mignon. Okay, we want cheap, grizzly meat here because we're going to break down that fat till it falls apart. So shoulder is perfect for this. Chuck roast, whatever cheap piece of roast you can buy. Just cut it into 1.5 to 2-inch cubes, relatively the same size, so all the meat cooks at the same way, the same time. And then season it with salt and pepper. Then heat a heavy bottom pot over medium-high heat. Add about 1/4 cup of olive oil. Start browning that meat a little bit at a time. Don't crowd the pot because, again, you know, if you've got a hot pan and you put too much meat in it, it cools the pan down. You're not going to get a good sear. Okay, do it in batches. Don't burn the meat. As Bourdain says, black is beautiful, but not on meat. So that's the key. So when all that meat is brown, you set it aside. You pour off the extra oil in the pan. Add 2 medium onions that you thinly sliced, okay? Brown the onions really well, but don't burn them. When they're browned nicely, dust the onions with a little bit of flour, so a couple tablespoons of flour. Stir to incorporate that flour well into the onions. Cook for an additional 3 to 4 minutes. Then hit those onions with 2 full cups of red wine. Because this dish comes from the region of Burgundy in France, Burgundy is the preferred wine of choice. You can find this stuff cheap in the wine aisle, all right? So you don't need to spend a lot of money on wine. Buy a big jug if you want. You can serve the wine with the meal or drink it while you're cooking or just cook with it later. If you can't find Burgundy, use whatever red wine you have. Just make sure it's red wine and make sure it's good wine. Okay, if you open a bottle of wine and the wine's gone bad, meaning it smells like vinegar or something, okay, don't use it in your dish because what's going to happen is it's going to taste like that. You're burning off the alcohol. All you're left with is the real flavor of the wine. So if the wine tastes like shit, your dish is going to be ruined, basically. So again, you don't have to spend a lot of money. You can go to Trader Joe's, and you can get this two-buck chuck, this Charles Shaw. Use that. You know, it's just wine, and it's decent wine. It doesn't taste bad. It's good. You stir the pot a little more, add the meat back to the pot, cut 5 to 6 medium-sized carrots that you've peeled into 1 to 2-inch chunks, throw those chunks into the pot. Now add 2 garlic cloves, a bay leaf, 2 sprigs of fresh thyme with the leaves, just the leaves removed, don't put the stems in there, and about 2 teaspoons of minced fresh rosemary to the pot. Now this is where people are going to go, what? Rosemary. I like to use rosemary a little bit at a time, not a lot. Rosemary is fantastic, make sure it's fresh, add it to the pot, stir it really well, add enough water to cover everything. Now another thing that I do that people normally wouldn't, I like to chuck a couple cubes of beef bouillon right into the pot. It helps give that broth some body, but it doesn't over-season it or compete with the wine. You don't have to do this, but I do it, you know, because it gives it a little bit extra body. Bring the pot to a low boil, drop the heat down to low, cover the pot, then go away. The stew will need about at least 2 hours before the meat's going to be really, really fork tender. You want it to fall off the fork. Come back to the pot every 15 minutes or so, give it a stir, make sure it's not sticking to the bottom, cover it, go away again. Drink some wine, do something. Taste it for seasoning. About 90 minutes in, you start to taste it. That's when you're going to start to be able to taste the broth, all right, the real flavor of the broth. If it needs some salt, you can add some salt. If you want more of a beefy flavor, you can add some beef broth or just let it continue to cook, and it will start to take on the flavor of that meat and the wine. It'll just be fantastic. The beef is always going to flavor that broth, all right? At the 90-minute mark is when I like to add 1 cup of pearl onions with the skins removed. These little onion gems get nice and soft and go very well with this stew. I know you might think it's a lot of onions, but it's really not. They cook down great, they get really sweet, add a lot of flavor to the broth. It's done when you can stick a fork into the piece of the meat, and the meat literally almost falls right off the fork. Believe me, this stuff is not going to require a knife to eat, so you can do it with a fork. Turn the heat off, set the pot aside, now you're done. You can reheat it later, you can serve it immediately. It's great over boiled potatoes, mashed potatoes, or my favorite, creamy polenta with Parmesan cheese. Or just have it on its own if you want. The stock should be rich, winey, full of flavor. Sprinkle some freshly chopped parsley along the top, and that's the dish. The carrots will have the hell cooked out of them, but they'll be soft, delicious, flavored with wine. It makes for great leftovers. You can eat it a couple days. You can eat this stuff. It tastes great the next day. That is my money meal.
As a chef, I like to bring joy to people. That's my job. I want to see happiness.
Stop!
Yes, chef.
Say yes, chef, and that's it, man!
Yes, chef.
Stop looking for excuses!
Yes, chef.
Stop to say yes, chef, 10 times!
Yes, chef.
Ludo Bites America, an all-new series, July 19th at 9.
Ludo Bites America debuts on the Sundance Channel on July 19th. You are not going to want to miss this show. It's going to run on Tuesdays for 6 weeks, I believe. and I'm sure they're going to replay the hell out of it. Call your local cable provider. Have Sundance added to your channel lineup. It comes in a package with Showtime and I believe the movie channel. I don't know if it's an additional $12 a month. Bite the bullet for a couple of months so you can see this show. And when you do this, make sure you tell them that you're interested in watching Ludo Bites America so they know why you're subscribing. That part is important. I doubt they'll be selling these episodes on iTunes. So unless they release the show on Blu-ray later, your only chance to see the mystery of Mr. Lefebvre is by getting this channel to your lineup for a couple of months. He toured all throughout the United States and set up one-night shots at Ludo Bites so that America can understand what Ludo Bites is. He learns all about American food culture, and it really is an eye-opener of a show, and I think it's going to be a real ratings grabber for that channel. And hopefully it'll get picked up, you know, for another year or maybe by another channel and everyone will be able to see it. But for now, it's only going to cost you $12. And listen, you know, call your cable operator. Make sure you tell them that Ludo sent you.
We say in France, you know, just one animal wake up every morning, these feet in the and still singing every morning. That's my life. I say, why not? To have a rooster as a logo.
Ludo Bites America, an all-new series, July 19th at 9.
Now, Ludo has a truck, the Ludo Fried Chicken Truck, and it's great chicken. The biscuits are amazing. It's great. Debbie Lee, she has the Anjou truck. That's also great. There are some great food trucks out there, but I think they serve a single purpose, to bring food to those that don't have great options around them. So, like, let's say you're at work, or you're in an industrial complex or a medical center, and this is why I'm bringing it up, really. We've been around a lot of hospital centers lately. And I'm telling you, the food options are nil. There's nothing. I don't know why. The cafeterias suck. You think that someone would really take advantage of this. You could make a mint if you open a cafe or a restaurant nearby, somewhere close to a place like that. But this is where the food trucks come in. This is when they're handy. They're bringing tasty food to you. Gourmet food, in most cases. And it's not overpriced. It's cooked fresh, it's great, and you don't have to drive someplace and deal with parking and all that other stuff. But for those of us who seek these trucks out to go eat and sit on a curb to eat, that I don't get.
Such a foodie. There I am, mooching a bite of a steak taco from a brand new friend. She didn't get it at a fast food joint or at a sit-down restaurant. She got it off a food truck, and they are everywhere these days. They're quick, they're cheap, and the food is often gourmet quality, believe it or not. And all you have to do to find them is to use your Facebook or Twitter accounts. That's how I did. So thanks, Tweeps, for helping me out. Here's a Twitter page for the Tamale Queen, one of our personal favorites. They send constant updates about where they're going to be and when. So we decided to head out and hit a few trucks at lunchtime. Here it is.
I got chicken and andouille sausage etouffee.
I have a barbecue pork sandwich with some chips and sweet pickles. And a cupcake.
But you're not eating a cupcake.
I will next.
How do you follow it?
Facebook's a good way to get the updates on where the trucks are going to be. They have all these festivals. They have events like this.
We saw it on Facebook and Twitter. We work for an ad agency, so we monitor the social media.
So I'm going to taste it. I'm going to do a taste test. Are you worried?
No worries.
Why?
Don't worry about the food. Pickle is the best in the whole wide world.
I think I want the crispy.
Wow, that is really good. Wow, look at all these people chowing down.
I can sneak out without my boss knowing.
It's definitely a break in the routine that you get out of a rut. Like, oh, should we eat here today? Yeah. We've had there. What do you think?
Tired of heading to the mall every day, so it's something new. Different.
We do bring our lunch, except for Friday, because the food trucks are here.
I brought my lunch today, and I ended up actually coming here instead. So I caved.
What do you think?
Actually, it's really good. I just wish I had a table. I'm not good at eating in my lap.
Good stuff. Check them out and go to your social media site. I'll tell you where they are.
Why would you go out of your way to eat off of a food truck? The lines are long. No, you're eating off of paper plates or plastic utensils. You're usually sitting on a curb while you eat, like a homeless person. There's just no need to do that if you don't have to. Go to a restaurant, sit down, order some food, eat, drink at a table with air conditioning. Why would you seek out a food truck to eat from? Convenience, I get that. But to hunt one down, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Okay, there's that argument. A lot of these food trucks are the restaurant. You can't eat that food unless you buy it off the truck. Well, if you really want it that badly, okay, great. But I'm too old for that shit. I feel dirty sitting on a curb eating food. It makes me feel homeless, and I don't want to feel homeless.
All right, combine picturesque scenery, top chefs, and fine wine, and you get the Aspen Food and Wine Festival. CNN brings you one of the most fun chefs to watch, Andrew Zimmern. Join us now. He is the host of Bizarre Foods and Bizarre World on the Travel Channel. Good to see you, Andrew.
Nice to see you, too.
Oh, well, you know, first, this Aspen gig must be so boring for you. Have you scouted out anything bizarre at this festival?
You know something? It's a really great kind of busman's holiday for me. When I'm in Namibia, I eat some pretty strange foods.
Yeah.
When I'm here in Aspen, I get to hang out with my chef friends, do a lot of demos for the folks here. It's one of the best food events on the planet.
Oh, okay. You're convincing me. It does sound kind of boring considering you travel the world from New York to the Caribbean to the Yucatan Peninsula to Southeast Asia. So tell me, if you can, what are some of the, you know, top bizarre foods that you've loved and loathed during all those travels?
This is very typical cooking style. Oh, my gosh. You know, some of the fermented foods that I've eaten are a little hard to swallow, and you have to sort of, like, retrain your gag reflex. Then again, I get to eat in some of the best restaurants in the world with some of the most amazing chefs, because some of our stories that are bizarre are some of the tales about pushing the envelope in terms of food-forward modernist cuisine. So I get the best of both worlds. I think I've got the best job in the food universe.
You do. I'm envious. I'm a foodie, too, but maybe not as adventurous as you. But as we speak about adventure, I just recently came from a trip in China where some rather peculiar things were, you know, on that Lazy Susan there. I did have to eat like a duck tongue, and there was that whole kind of barbecued swallow on the plate as well. So what happens? Yeah. What do you do when you're offered something that you don't really want to try, but you don't want to offend anyone?
Well, you've just mentioned two of my favorite foods, so you've got me hungry in a way that I haven't been in about a day.
Oh, you scare me.
China's one of my favorite places to eat, and I always remind myself, especially with friends who are visiting that country, a billion Chinese grandmas can't be wrong. The reason that those items are on the Lazy Susan is because they taste good, so you should at least try it. Just remember that everybody there is just, they think it's weird we eat cheese.
Yeah.
I was in Africa a couple of years ago, and a tribe's person in Uganda said to me when I was eating some cheddar out of my backpack, he said, "What are you doing? That's just you Americans. You let milk rot into little squares and then you dry it and eat it." And I was like, you know, cheese is just controlled spoilage. You've got a point.
Oh,
so one
funny.
Man's weird is another man's wonderful.
That is really true. There was no cheese anywhere in sight on that Lazy Susan when I was there, but that didn't mean that they were, you know, staying away from dairy and, you know, altogether. There were rotten eggs, they like to call the thousand-year-old eggs. Anyway, I digress.
Those are really harsh. They taste like cheese.
Yeah,
you really got to like cheese to like a thousand-year-old egg.
That's right. You're really strong smelling.
I often wonder, because that's a lazy question, I wonder if he gets tired of answering those same questions. I mean, what's the most disgusting thing you've ever eaten? You know, what's the one thing that you found was the most bizarre? Those are kind of lazy questions, but for people who don't know who Zimmern is, or anyone who hasn't watched his show, I suppose it's kind of helpful. But I'll tell you something. One of the things that's great about his show is that it does drive home the point that there really is no bizarre food. We only think it's bizarre. People eat this stuff all the time. And some of the foods are delicacies. Brad Brown mentioned on Facebook the other day that he really wants to try balut someday. And I said, "No, you really don't. It's disgusting." And he goes, no, that's why I want to try it. And I've been through this already 100 times. I've said, "Look, I want to experiment with the bizarre." But you try a few things, and very tame things that I've had. I know what my limits are. Stinky cheese, pig eyeballs, pork uterus, all kinds of awful. I can do those things. But I've seen the fermented duck eggs. I've smelled them. I've seen them. And I don't want any part of it. I thought, "No, I can do this." And I got it up to my nose and said, "No, I can't." These Asian markets, they'll sell this stuff. It's frightening. I would never imagine eating one that had a half-hatched baby duck in it. It would leave mental scars. You know, with the guts and the feet and the beak and the hair. Ugh, just horrible. But Brad, you want it? Search it out, man. It's hard enough to find balut here on this coast. But I know if you look hard enough, you'll be able to get your hands on it. Yeah, it's just nasty. Anyway, I'm out of here. Thanks to CNN for the audio. Thanks to you for taking the time to listen. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Please join that Facebook group page, man. It's really, this is getting embarrassing. And don't forget to enter your money meal recipes in the comments section for this episode, episode 80. And we'll post it on the site. I'm going to start a little community of listener recipes. Hopefully, we really do have more than 140 listeners out there. We'll find out soon enough. Anyway, there's links to everything on the website, mylifeasafoodie.com. Again, sorry for the delay. Hopefully, we'll be back on the gravy train here. No pun intended. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and we'll see you next time. Ciao.